Why do so many dogs die before their time? Actress and dog activist Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. Superfood Complete by Badlands Ranch is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including premium protein-packed beef, nutrient-dense organ meat, heart-healthy salmon, gut-healthy vegetables, and several superfoods vital to your dog's health. And because high-heat cooking can add unhealthy things to your dog's food, Superfood Complete uses air drying, so it gets cooked low and slow. This means it has the convenience of kibble, but the health benefits of whole foods. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible benefits, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 right now to get up to 50% off your order and a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's badlandsranch.com/save50 today. All dogs are unique. Your dog's results can and will vary.
Early holiday savings have arrived at Tanger Outlets. Discover the best gifts from your favorite brands, perfect for everyone on your list. And stack your savings with up to 70% off, plus an extra 15 to 25% off only during Tanger Style. Save at Polo Ralph Lauren, Old Navy Outlet, Under Armour, Skechers, J.Crew Factory, and more. Hurry in. These early holiday deals last through November 24th. Tanger Outlets. More savings, more cheer.
Hi everyone, welcome to a new episode of Power Talk. And on this episode, I am once again joined by Tom, Mr. Shrouded Hand, because it is Halloween. Well, nearly Halloween. So, without further ado, let me bring Tom in and let's get this extra spooky episode on the road. Hello, Tom.
Hello.
How are you, mate?
Yeah, not bad. Yeah. Love this time of year, so I'm happy.
We are here once again on the eve of Halloween. What have you been up to?
Well, I've been working hard, making some videos, been streaming some Silent Hill 2 remake.
Do you know what? For a moment, I thought you said you'd been working out. And I thought, I was imagining you on this big like bench press, getting like in massive Hulk man.
No, God, no.
So you've been playing...
I wouldn't know how to. If I went to a gym, I don't think I'd know how to use the equipment. I'd be one of them people you see on the videos, you know, when they film people in
doing Insta,
using the equipment,
doing the Insta. It'd be doing
like
they
like make fun of them. I'd be that person, I think.
Got your yoga pants on, and your little bum bag, and you're doing your Insta to your to your Shrouded Hand channel. Like, anyway, so what I was going to say was, it's because it's Halloween, and we have returned once again to another episode of just mindless really waffle. I thought it would be interesting to firstly find out, do you have any plans for Halloween?
No, you know what, I'm doing a live stream on the Proper Horror Shows channel, that's my plans. He's got some do you know the quiz show Only Connect?
No, I don't. Well, no. Please, please inform
it's
me.
Good. Well, it's a BBC quiz show. She's doing like a horror themed version of that. I think it's like a, I don't know. You get like four words that seemingly have no link to, and then you have to find what connects them, and then come up with the answer. It's one of those quizzes which is like super brainy people go on it. So I'm hoping her version is for like thick people like me. So we'll see. That's my plan for Halloween.
I used to do, my mate was into like pub quizzes. Back when I was a young man, we used to do, pub quizzes were a thing, and it was a new thing. And my mate was really into it. And he used to say to me, come down the pub, Reese, I'll buy you a drink, be part of the team, and we're going to do a pub quiz, and we're going to beat them, we're going to get the cup and put it on the wall and stuff. And I went one time, and all of the questions, the guy that was doing the questioning, he picked such random questions that how are you meant to know that? It's like, what was the famous goat of so-and-so in Albania in 1982? Yeah. And I'm like, how am I meant to know that? You know, just ask me a question like, you know, what was the singer in Blondie called or something? You know, ask me something basic. Yeah. But it was like really intellectual stuff. It was really kind of like out there questions. And I did feel rather rather sort of a little bit stupid in a way. Not because... I just felt weird. It was like, I don't know.
You've got to find the right balance with a pub quiz. I'm quite a fan of the pub quiz, and some of them I've been to are like that. The questions I find so hard, and it's like it's not fun because you just, I don't know, you just don't know anything. And then there's like the other side of it. I've been to pub quizzes that are so easy. It's like everyone just gets 100%, and they come to the end and they read out like what teams have got what, and like everyone's got either like 100 out of 100 or like 98. There'll be like one random question that you don't know, and it's just like, that's no fun either, because it's just like there's no challenge to it. You've got to find one that's right in the middle. I think I found one. There's one by me that's kind of like that, and I've started to enjoy going to that one. But yeah, I've been to quite a few different pub quizzes, and there's a balance to be struck there.
I've got a brilliant idea for a paranormal pub quiz. And what you do is you get two teams of people in the pub, and it's all the questions are paranormal. So they've all got to be ghostified or whatever, unexplained or supernatural. But you can't answer as a team. Nobody gets asked the question directly. The way it works is each team member, like group, has got a table, and on that table is a Ouija board.
I thought you were going to say that. Yes.
They get asked the question, and then the Ouija board has got to spell it out, the answer.
Yeah, that's good.
How long would that take? How many questions would you get
done? How would you enforce it, though? That's the thing. You'd have to have someone standing over every table making sure they went getting the answers from the Ouija board.
You need a special planchette with some sort of anti-cheat device built into it.
Yeah.
And then you'd know that they're not just randomly going, yeah, I know how to spell that.
You could have different rounds. You could have like the Ouija board round and then the automatic writing round, and then like the ghost box round, or a round where you've got to record EVPs and get your answers from there. Yeah, that could be good. That
I talking about ghost boxes, as you do. I was watching somebody the other day with a guy. He said, I'm going to get the ghost box out now. And he got this radio, like this little radio out. It's basically with the broken scanner, and it was just going up.
Mm.
And I can't get my head around those. I just like, you hear words like sausage, chicken. There you go.
Yeah.
Chicken that died of eating a sausage. I'm very skeptical when it comes to those devices. I don't know why.
I'm kind of the same. Pretty much of any of those like ghost hunting gimmicky devices, I just find like every time I'm watching a ghost hunting show, they've got so many things going off. I always think surely you'd catch more, or you'd have a better experience if you just sat there quietly, just absorbing the atmosphere, seeing what you can hear and see with your eyes and ears. But they've just got like a million gadgets. They've got the ghost box things scanning through the radio. They've got these like motion sensor things that seem to just go off randomly. You know, a gust of wind hits it and it'll go off, and they'll think that's a ghost. And these like laser things that shine on the walls. I'm sure some of them are good, but I always just think, what happened to just the art of just sitting and doing like a vigil with your own body? No gadgets or anything. I mean, I do like watching these ghost hunting shows with things like that, but I just think sometimes, and I'm talking more about the ones that are, so there's quite a few on Amazon Prime that seem to be shoved on there, and they're kind of, I don't know, they seem a bit like, they seem a bit thrown together, and they just seem to, every show just seems to have like a million gadgets all going off, and it's just like, I saw one where they had these like motion detecting robots that ran along the ground, and they were like little kids' toys, and they just have like a room. They'd have all these like toys running around, like these little robots roaming around all over the floor, and it just seemed a bit daft to me.
Yeah, I do think the more technical stuff, the more gadgetry you introduce, the more chance there is for false positives. And you can have very simple devices like, you know, electronic thermometers, motion detectors, which are simply just a light that goes off if something breaks a beam. But I think a lot of it's getting very sort of over technical now, and you rely on it. You don't, you know, if you look at the old, you know, the old ghost hunters, they maybe had a thermometer, a cassette recorder, and a pot of talcum powder, and that was it. And it was like they put the talcum powder in front of all the, you know, the doorways or whatever. They put their cassette recorder going, and then they would just smoke a pipe for half an hour and see what happened. So yeah, I think you are right. It does come down to you know, using your body as well and your senses.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, because I've never been like on a ghost investigation and used this stuff really. You know, I'm not talking from experience. It's just the only thing that made me reconsider those devices was I was watching. There's an episode of Dorset Ghost Investigators. I don't think they still do investigations, but they used to do really good videos. And they had one of those ones where it's like, you know, it's supposed to pick up something in the atmosphere, and then it like spits out a robotic word.
Oh yeah,
says it.
Yeah,
what they're called. You know, those sort of things.
Yes,
I think you can get apps to do them now. And there was one where, and I was watching their videos, and they were using these things, and I thought they're just spitting out random words. What, you know? But they did a thing. They pointed the camera at it, and they said, "Can you complete this? 1, 2, 3, 4." And the thing spat out 5, and they showed the screen as it did it, and it was like, this thing just spits out random words all over the place.
Yeah.
How could it like complete that? And it did it right in time with them saying it. They counted to 4, and then the next word it spat out was 5.
So that is interesting. Really, yeah. Things like that are interesting. When you use a device in a kind of way like that, and you get a response, you do. But I see, one of the things that I, you know, not to waffle on too much about this, but one of the things that I find infuriating, you know, is when you go on an investigation and you've got these devices and you think, right, okay, if that were me, I would put that there or I'd do this. And everyone's got their own style of doing investigations and, you know, what equipment they use. But I always think to myself, one of the important things is, if you go somewhere, is to try and get a time, a date, your name, get something to say your name, you know, and then you know you're onto something. But just random words, and then you put those words into a context of, oh well, that's got to be something to do with the building, or that has to be, you know, part. You're kind of creating a story to fit in with what you want it to be. I'm not saying that happens all the time, but it's just one of those things that you can mislead yourself. And I do think there are, you know, TV shows out there that, like you said, that are put together with that pretense of, doesn't matter what you get, we're going to stitch it together in a way that makes it look like something is being presented that might not be presented in a way which you see it to be, you know?
Yeah, I much prefer the independent YouTubers. That what's that channel called? Dead Air. I think you put me onto him. Has he been on?
Yeah,
a few times.
Yeah,
yours?
A few times. Very.
I really like. He's got quite a lot of gadgets, but he presents. He you can tell he's genuinely like trying to catch you something, and he's not just doing something for entertainment. Mm. He's like really serious, and he goes out of his way to try and. I've watched his stuff quite a lot now, and he's captured some really interesting things.
I remember speaking to him about when he went to the Aleister Crowley, his place.
Yeah,
and he went there, and he had he said when he went there, he didn't expect anything to happen. When he went there, it was still semi derelict. There would have been a very bad fire, and it was some of the roof was gone, but part of the building was still what I would call reasonably intact. And he went there in, he did a part daytime, part nighttime investigation, and he said that the daytime was okay, but when it got to nighttime and he was in the building, he felt very, very uneasy, like he wasn't alone in the building. Rob, he's done loads of investigations all over the place, all over Europe, everywhere. And he said that when he was there, that he had basically a feeling of terror. He had to get out. He felt unwell. He felt dizzy. Mm. And he had also had a problem with his... he carries a drone with him for doing like reconnaissance and filming. And nothing worked properly. In that area, nothing worked properly. So
yeah.
Put that down to coincidence or whatever. But he very rarely, how can I put it? He very rarely sort of, he won't say something happened if it didn't happen, put it that way. He's more likely to say, oh, it's likely to be, you know, weather or an angry cat that made a meow or whatever, you know, that sort of thing. He's more logical when he comes to ghost hunting and investigations and stuff. So he's gone to some very interesting places, and he's a very logical investigator, and he does look at things from a very sort of logical mindset. He doesn't just go to Swansea and go, oh, I heard this, so it must be the soldier that came back and told me to get
here.
So he is very good, and his stuff is very well made as well. He's been on the podcast a couple of times, I think. He's due to come back on before Christmas for a catch up, because he has gone to a couple of places over the last few months, and I expect those episodes will be popping up at some point. But I'm waiting for them to come up so that we can get him back on and have a chat about what he experienced and stuff. Because I like to watch his episodes and then get him on and ask him, because you only see what you see from an edited version, and it's nice to hear anything that went on in the background. And I think some of the listeners might enjoy that as well. What I was going to say with Halloween, because this is the Halloween episode, films and stuff. I remember as a teenager growing up in the 1980s, because I have to get that in there. Did you used to have like watch parties with you when you was a young boy? Did you have like watch parties?
Nah, not really. I wasn't allowed to watch horror films as a kid.
Really?
Yeah. I had a group of friends who lived quite far away from where I lived, like, you know, a few streets away. When you're a kid, that's far away. And they used to go around to one particular kid's house, and his mum didn't care about what they watched, and they'd watch all sorts of stuff. And then I'd hear about these movies, like, my friend would, like, describe in detail everything. I remember him describing, like, Child's Play and stuff like that in great detail. So I had all these images in my head of these horror films, but yeah. I was, like, never allowed to watch them, and I didn't live close enough to be able to, like, sneak around to this kid's house and watch horror films at his place, so... Yeah, I didn't really have that experience, sadly.
Back then, the video store was king. Every Friday and Saturday night, the video shops, when there was loads of independent ones as well, would be basically full of teenagers, wanting there to get their latest film or whatever. And I remember most Halloween, we would have friends, or I was quite fortunate because my parents had a video player. They would either come around my house or we'd go around their house, and there'd be a large group of us, and we would go to the local video store and we'd get a film, and we'd obviously come back and watch it, you know, as a group, and we'd have our, like, you know, we'd have our Pepsi and our, you know, or our sort of Tango or our, you know, Quattro or our Lilt or whatever it might have been, and we'd be all, like, you know, watching the film and stuff. But the thing was, you don't really think about it, like, you don't really pay any attention to it now. But back then, watching a slasher film like Halloween or the film Halloween or Friday the 13th or I Spit on Your Grave or any of those, or zombie films or whatever, all classics now, of course, they're all classics. And a lot of them were banned, and they were, you know, some of them got banned, and it took years for them to be, you know, unbanned. And into in some of the retrospect, those films back then are very tame in comparison to what you get now. But the thing was, we were sort of, you know, 16, maybe 17, coming up to either just leaving school, you know, at the point of end our last year of school or just left school. And we did this for a few years. I mean, people drift apart, don't you? You go off and do stuff and go to university and college and, you know, and your friendship circle changes or it evolves into other people. But you don't think, like, we're watching a film that's like, it comes up with a big 18 on the screen. None of us are 18. And your mum doesn't know. You know, she doesn't know. She doesn't really watch the videos. She's reading her woman's own in the kitchen with her mate, drinking having a sherry or whatever. So it's but watching those films, I there's one film that really scared me from watching all those films. A lot of them we just laughed at and thought we were funny. But I remember watching with my mates, we watched The Evil Dead. And I don't know what it was about that film, but going home, I was around my mate's house then, and I lived about 4 miles away. So the only way that I could get home was do one or two things. I could get the bus, or back then the buses would stop running at like 11 o'clock, and I'd have to walk home. And I got to say that, because obviously I was watching this film, and it was gone 11 o'clock, and I said to my mum, yeah, I'll be home. It's all right, Mum, I'll be home before. No, I wasn't. It was like I'd left there about 20 to 12, you know, it was nearly midnight. And I remember that I'm suddenly come out of the house thinking, oh no, the buses don't run, do they? And I had like 30 pence in my pocket because I'd spent it all on like, you know, cola bars and whatever, you know, and Panda Pop. I'd spent it all. And I had to walk home, 4 miles home at the, early hours of the morning with the Evil Dead in my head. In my head. The Evil Dead and the zombies in my head, and every person that was coming near me, I was thinking, yeah, they could be the one. And I pretty much ran the last mile home. But it was like that film, I don't know, it just burnt into my head and I didn't really watch a lot of horror since that time as a kid. I didn't really watch a lot of horror films. But, I mean, some people love it. I mean, you know, but what do you think the difference is between, like, horror then and horror now?
I don't know. I mean, like, horror goes through different sort of phases, isn't it, in different decades. I know there was a phase where it was all like, you know, when Scream came out, and that was like the horror resurgence. And then there was a load of those kind of movies that came out in a short space of time, like I Know What You Did Last Summer and all that. And then it went away for a bit. And then it seemed to come back with all those like Conjuring movies. Mm. We went into much more of a supernatural type of bent.
Very kind of the Conjuring films always reminded me of a resurgence of the classic ghost accounts from, you know, from like the 70s and stuff, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, a lot of them were like inspired by that, wasn't it? The Warrens. I think all the Conjuring films are like based on something from the Warrens back catalogue.
I don't know what it is about modern horror films. I just think some of them are, I don't know. Like, I've watched a few, you know, on the Netflix and that, and I tend to watch them and I think, oh no, I can't watch anymore. It's too real. It's like, it seems to be, it's more psychological than anything. It's like, it gets in your brain. You know, it's not like someone running around with a knife going, oh, we're at the camp and there's a man, I'm dead.
Well, it depends which ones you watch, I suppose. Mm. I went off watching horror films, like recent ones, because a lot of them seem to be, they rely too much on like, CGI effects one, and they always had like the same sort of jump scares in them. I got a bit sick of them. They all kind of felt a bit sort of bland and stuff. I haven't watched a lot of the new ones, like the ones that are on Netflix. I'll tell you a good one I watched recently was Longlegs. Went to see that at the cinema.
I've heard of that. I haven't seen it.
Cage.
Yeah,
that's good, and that is really psychological. That is one that I thought was genuinely quite creepy.
Well, moving on just a little bit, just a tiny little bit from horror and slasher films. Did you know that Halloween is a time to dress your pet up as a, you know, as like Dracula or Frankenstein? Or if you've got like a little, dog and you can make him a costume, or yeah. You've got a cat, you can put him in like a costume and make him into like the Wolfman or something. Or you've got a little hamster, something like that. Any pet, really. You can put a costume on them. That's a thing. Did you know that?
Yeah, I've seen those things. Yeah, dog costumes. Yeah, so I've never done it.
You've got a dog.
Yeah.
What costume would you put your dog in?
She would not. She would not wear a costume. I guarantee it.
All right. It's not negotiable. You've got to put your dog in a costume.
Well, she's Romanian, so I guess it would have to be some kind of Dracula outfit, wouldn't it?
So your dog would be a Dracula?
Yeah, I think so. She's got these weird, she looks a bit like a sheepdog, but she's got these weird, hairs, like two hairs on either side of her muzzle that sort of hang down longer, so they kind of look like fangs. I imagine if I sort of stained them white somehow and then put, a cloak on her or something. Some bat wings, maybe.
Yeah, that would be quite cool. And then you could go... did you ever used to go, trick-or-treating? Did you ever do any of that?
I wasn't allowed. I wasn't allowed to do nothing fun on Halloween.
You were forbidden? You were forbidden?
No, I wasn't allowed to watch horror films. I wasn't allowed to go trick-or-treating.
So, yeah. I used to, with my mates. When I was young, I did. When I was older... Differences is different levels of trick-or-treating. When you were a little kid, you would go... I remember going with my mum, my brother, and we'd add these bags, and we would go around all the neighbours' houses, knocking on the door, basically just being beggars and begging for food and begging for sweets. Because that's what you're doing, really, isn't it? You're just begging. I mean, right, when I was younger, right, I used to make costumes, and my mum would give us stuff. Like old bits of paper and cloth. I was going to say rags then, but that makes me sound like a vagabond. But it's a cloth and things that we could use to make costumes. And me and my brother used to make these costumes, and they were it was the best we could do with what we had. Most of the time I was a zombie because it's just rags. You just pin it onto your normal clothes, basically. It's easy. Put some, put some of your mum's lipstick on your face, and then you go, you're a zombie. But anyway, we used to do stuff like that, and we had a bag, right? And my mum would take us around all these. I'm absolutely sure this was all pre-planned. I think my mum had got together with all the other mums and said, listen, this is what we're going to do. At this time, our kids are going to be at this house. At this time, the kids are going to be at that house. And so we never met any of the other kids. We were in this kind of carousel of sweet collecting, for an hour. And it was always in our road, it was never further away. It was always in our road. So anyway, we would go out, knock on doors, and we go, trick or treat. And then they'd go, here's some sweets. Yeah, go away. And then, of course, the other kids would come and go, and it would be like that for an hour. And then we'd all go home, eat our sweets and be really ill. And then we could all go, I got tummy ache, I can't go to school. But anyway, so when you got older, right, this is really weird now, me talking about this, but I'm a teenager, right? And I'd be at school, 14, 15, and you'd go up to your boy, Gary, all right, you go trick-or-treating tonight. It's like, you're 14, you go trick-or-treating, you're 14, mate. You should be down the youth club talking to the girls. Let's go trick-or-treating, get some sweets and stuff. It's like, you're 14. But anyway, I'll be there, I'll call you 7. So, but we would, we would dress up. But it was the most low-key, low-fi dress-up that you could, my mate turned up.
A bin bag over the head. Yeah,
well, my mate turned up once, and he's in his, normal coat, right? He's in his normal coat. And he's got his jeans on and his Nike trainers. And we're going, why haven't you dressed up? Well, I have. Well, why haven't you? what are you wearing? Well, look. And he just had like black rings around his eyes. And he's like, I'm a zombie. And I'm like, you just put makeup on your eyes. Like you got two black eyes. But that was his makeup. We were a little bit more. I put some gel in my hair. You could get this gel back in the day. It was like 25 pence, right? And anybody that grew up in the 80s will know the gel I'm on about. And I bet they're laughing their asses off right now because you could get it in like yellow, green, blue. And you had like, it was basically all of it was like cement. It was just like you might as well just put cement in your hair because it was like,
yeah, I remember
that stuff.
And it was like wet. You could get like that wet looking gel and make your hair look like it was with sweat all the time.
And that's right. It looked like it'd just been running from the police for like an hour. But the thing is, right, we would all like, I put all this gel in my hair, right? And I had like quite short hair when I was younger. And I put this gel in my hair and it was all like really spiky. And I remember my mate coming up, right? And he went, oi, oi, cookie. And back of my head, right? He rushed the back of my head, don't touch my hair. And he brushed the back of my head. And of course, once you break the gel seal on your hair, it goes all puffy and fluffy. So I had all this like really kind of gelled hair at the front and big puffy bear at the back.
Early holiday savings have arrived at Tanger Outlets. Discover the best gifts from your favorite brands, perfect for everyone on your list. And stack your savings with up to 70% off, plus an extra 15 to 25% off only during Tanger Style. Save at Polo Ralph Lauren, Old Navy Outlet, Under Armour, Skechers, J.Crew Factory, and more. Hurry in. These early holiday deals last through November 24th. Tanger Outlets. More savings, more cheer.
So yeah, he ruined my look for that evening. But no, I kind of put a bit of makeup on and did a few do you remember those cheapo Dracula teeth that you could get in the joke shop?
Yeah.
They were like usually next to the fart powder and the itching powder.
Mm-hmm.
I had a pair of those and I put them in, and we were like 14 years old knocking on people's doors going trick or treat. And most people go, it's off. Oh, yeah, you little kids. What's wrong with you? Go to the youth club. What's wrong with you? So, we would we'd knock on people's doors. And most people, they wouldn't answer because their sweets were safe for the little kids. You know, the little kids come around, the little four-year-olds or whatever, knocking on the door.
And you'd be scared of getting egged or something.
Well, yeah.
A bunch of teenagers are probably...
My mate did have... He turned up, right, and he said, and one bloke chased us. I wasn't, but a couple of my mates were in his garden, like, and they were knocking on his window, tapping on his window, and pushing their faces up against. And he came out with like a, I don't know whether it was like a shovel or a baseball bat or something. And we cacked it and ran. We jumped over the edge, and my mate, right, we ran down the end of the road, and he shouted, right, and my mate's like, You know, when you're a young kid, right? You're a teenager. You're all like tough and, you know, you're all like, But then they come out and you run away. And you run away, right? And then the guy go back inside and then you're like, oh, he's lucky. He was lucky. And then my mate's like that and he's like, I got eggs on me. Let's take him. Let's take his car. And we're like, are you mental? He just chased us with a baseball bat. He's going to batter us if he gets us. And he's like, oh, you can't do that. But no, So, yeah, we went off down the... we ended up at a youth club. We actually took someone's advice and went to the youth club. And this guy, he sat there all night, like, really angry, with, like, six eggs in his pocket. And I don't know where he got... I must have nicked him out of the fridge or whatever. I bet his mum, right, was, what do you want for... the dad, what do you want? All have egg and chips, love. He went to the fridge. I didn't use all his eggs, did I? Where they gone? No, he's nicked them. He's in his pocket. No, I
your Halloween sound way more sociable than mine.
Yeah, but they didn't last. I mean, it was a few years we did that when we was teenagers. We did it for a few years, and of course when you get a bit older and it's like, you know, you realise that I'm a bit old for this now. I'm a bit old for knocking on people's doors. When people look, you know, don't give you nothing, but. It got to a point where it was like, it wasn't cool anymore. You know, you weren't cool if you were trick-or-treating. It was for little kids. But, yeah, they were fun. And, you know, it was fun to do and just have a bit of a laugh. But when you're a teenager.
It sounds good.
It was all right. I mean, you know, it good memories.
I tell you what my Halloween's were.
Yeah,
like.
Please do.
My parents were like so scared of opening the door and getting egged or something. We'd have to sit in like, because our house, we had our front room was like at the back of the house. We'd have to sit in there with the TV turned down quiet. And all the lights on the front of the house had to be out. And we couldn't go out there to like, you know, get something from the bedroom. We'd just have to sit all night until the trick-or-treaters had stopped. No, don't go out there. Can't let them know we're here.
That's a bit like...
Can't answer the...
That's a bit like when the rent man comes around and you haven't got the rent.
Yeah, it was like that. And then it got a bit better when I finally got a TV in my room. I got this little black and white TV thing in my room. And then... That was the first time I really started watching horror films, because they'd show them at Halloween,
yeah.
And I'd sneak into my room and stay up with the TV on quiet in my room watching. Like I remember, like It would be on, and I'd be sat there. I would have been quite young, and because I'd not had any experience of horror films up to that point. And I remember sitting there with like watching It, but like with my hand on the dial just to switch over quickly. I had this like knob that you had to change the channels. As soon as there's something scary, I'm switch to something else. And that was my experience.
You might have been thinking about TVs a minute. I had a telly in my bedroom. I had a black and white telly. It was my mum and dad's old telly, because back in the late 70s, when colour TV became a thing, they got a colour TV. Well, they went to... I think it was is another blast from the past. They went to Radio Rentals and rented a TV, a 26-inch colour TV. And that, of course, I was asking my mum, "Oh, mum, can I have the old TV?" It was only like a 21-inch black and white mono TV. And my dad was like, "No, he's not having a bleeding TV in his room. He'd be up all night watching all sorts of things." But most TV back then ended at midnight anyway. It went off. You know, it got to midnight, they play the national anthem, and it was just fuzz. It was nothing. So after a while, I got to have a TV in my room. I got to have it, but under certain, it was quite strict. I could watch it, but it had to go off at like, I think it was like 9:30 or 10:00, and my mum would check in on me, you know, and before they went to bed. She would like look in, make sure I'm not watching it. But I had a plan, right? So what I did was, right, I had this radio, and the radio had two small speakers in it, right? Now, this is going to sound something like MacGyver, right? But this is late 70s, like, kid thinking. I had these two little speakers, right? So what I did is I got the long speaker wire. Now, it's a mono telly, so I basically took the back off the telly, found the speaker, connected with some sellotape the wire to the speaker, right? Put the back on. Then I put the wire all the way around the corner of my bedroom, back up to the back of my bed, and then I doubled the wire up, right, so that I could connect two speakers either side of my pillow, in my pillow, right? In my pillow, right? And then I would set the volume on the telly, right? There's no remote control. It's all like done manually. So I have to preset the volume so that when my head's on the pillow, I can hear the sound, but it's not loud enough. There's audible, you know, where somebody's in the room. They can't hear it. But, I had a secret weapon. Next to my bed, I had a long stick, a long piece of like bamboo cane, which is, basically, it was an old bit of cane from a window where we had the curtains, but my mum had it changed to a proper thing. So I kept it. I thought, "Oh, I'll keep that, Ma." And she said, "What do you want that for? I'm going to make a fishing rod out of it." But I knew what I wanted it for. So when I heard my mum coming up the stairs when I was watching, some late night Streets of San Francisco or whatever, or Starsky and Hutch, all I did was get the bamboo cane and then over to the telly, which is on the other side of the room, and then click the button off, and the telly went off. And then I pretend to be asleep. And then my mum would look in and go, "No, Rose." I go, "No, no." And then she went, go off and like a click, and it come back on, a bit of Huggy Bear or whatever, a bit of Starsky Nutch, a bit of whatever it was I was watching, a bit of Sweeney. So yeah,
you know what?
Brilliant.
I bet your mum knew your.
I bet she did.
I bet she was just, yeah. He's gone to so much effort with that stick and his speaker setup.
Oh, it's brilliant. Let him out. It was brilliant. I don't know. It just, I had this, I don't know. I wanted to see all the films, like I wanted to watch like The Professionals. I wanted to watch The Sweeney. People would go, I'd go to school the next day and they'd go, did you watch The Sweeney last night? And I'm like, no, I'm not allowed to watch that. Oh, well, your parents know what you watch. I watch Sweeney, watch The Professionals. No, I can't watch that. It's too violent. But it's like, yeah. You know, it's like, you're little kids, you know. Like I was like 8, 9 years old, and some of my mates have they got tellies in their room and they're watching all that stuff. I got a telly and I'm not allowed to watch it. Well, I am now because I've got a secret weapon. But yeah, but that was brilliant, absolutely brilliant.
What you say now about going into school? One of my biggest things like that is going into school and everyone talking about Ghostwatch.
Oh, brilliant.
I don't know if we've spoken about this on this
brilliant
podcast before, but I remember everyone talking about that and I just had no idea. It wasn't until absolutely years later that I got to watch.
Did you believe it was completely real? I did. I was completely taken by it.
I hadn't seen it, but like I remember that all the kids were freaking out about this thing that they'd seen the night before. Oh my God, did you see that? And I remember the teacher having to like stand the kids, like, you know, stand in front of the kids, bit like, right, everyone calm down.
Give everyone a little bit of a background into what it was and what it was, so anyone listening doesn't know what we're on about.
Okay, well, it was a BBC show, and it was like...
The one-off, wasn't it?
It's basically like, it was like, yeah, and it was like a precursor to Most Haunted and stuff like that. If you just a classic, like, ghost hunting show like Most Haunted... I think probably took inspiration from this. It was set up like it was real. Like they'd put these cameras around a suburban house that was supposedly haunted, and they had Craig Charles and I can't remember the
Sarah Green.
Yeah, Sarah Green as the presenters, and they were playing themselves.
Not Michael Aspel, the other guy. Oh, what was his name? He was like the main presenter, wasn't he? Trying to think of his name.
Was it Michael?
No, it was Vince. No, it was on that same sort of level.
Oh, I don't know. I'm really bad with presenters' names. Anyway, yeah, he was back at the studio, like getting the experts in to talk about ghosts. But it was Craig Charles and Sarah Green were like on the ground, and then everyone was playing themselves in this thing. You know, they were playing like. This is the first time we've done like a live ghost hunt or whatever. And they go into a house and it's just your typical things, like you'd have like, I don't know, nothing really be happening, like a normal ghost hunt. There wouldn't be much happening. They'd be sort of walking around the house and now and then you'd hear like a knock or something like that. And then things just ramped up over the course of the episode. And until by the end of it, people were getting possessed, and there was all these like people were getting attacked by this ghost, and it ended up like coming through the TV screen and attacking the studio where they were recording things, and people were getting possessed there, and it's genuinely quite a terrifying show. Even if you watch it, today,
it was Michael Parkinson.
That's it. Yeah,
it was the main geezer that was presenting. Here's the thing, right? With Ghost Watch, because it was done like a live investigation. The whole pretense was that there was a spirit in the house, and it was an angry guy from years ago who had come back, and he was causing all the mayhem, like pipes, that's it. Well, the thing was, right, there's things that, when I watch that now, and if anybody wants to watch it, just go to YouTube and type in UK TV show Ghost Watch. And it's on there. You can watch it because it was banned. They did ban it for a while over here.
Yeah.
But we'll touch on that in a minute, the reasons behind that. But the thing was, right, if you look in the episode, now I don't remember, the only scary thing that I remember seeing was when the girls were in bed and the guy allegedly the spirit of the guy was in the bedroom by the curtains. You could see his outline. And but there were also a number of other times that he appeared in shots where you have to actually go back and look. There's a reflection of him in the mirror when someone gets smashed on the floor. And there's another reflection of him in the kitchen when he stood behind the camera crew. But it's such a quick pan that you don't, your brain doesn't see him. But when you do it on the frame by frame, he stood there. So they were very clever about stuff like that. And people were ringing into the show going, I've seen him. I see him in the kitchen. And it was all very cleverly, the placement was there for a reason. But that show had...
And they had like a, they had a thing where it was like, they were kind of pretending people were ringing in.
Yeah.
On, but it was all pre-recorded, but they pretended it was live. And they had a bit where they said, oh, we've had a phone call from someone saying they can see, they saw him standing here in this particular time. And they played the footage forward and he stood there. You can see like a big outline.
That's right.
And they were like, right, let's rewind it.
That's right.
And they play it back and he's not there. So it makes you think, you're like imagining it.
Yeah.
It's really, really clever.
But it did generate a lot of... letters to the BBC about after it had gone in. People were actually saying that when they were watching the show, that they were having things happening in their home. Somebody said that their watch had stopped and it wouldn't work anymore. Other people were saying that they'd had poltergeist activity, and you think to yourself that the power of that, the power of suggestion? Where are you? You know, are you making people believe that something's happening? But one of the biggest controversies was a young lad took his life.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I made a video about it. Yeah, he hung him. So it was a witch tree where he took his life.
And it was.
I don't know. I don't want to go into too much detail in case it's a bit.
We got to be careful. We got to be careful with the algorithms now. But he as people know, he did a deed, and there was a massive controversy about it that shows like this and if you think about it, any program like that, the amount of power that it can put across, you know, especially if that was new, that was something that hadn't been done really, apart from like War of the Worlds when they did the radio show, had the same sort of effect but on a much bigger scale.
These days that kind of fake documentary, fake investigation. There's so many of them. It's kind of a bit old hat, but
that back then, I believed for a while after seeing it. I believed that it was completely. Even if you watch back now, it's some of it's completely silly, especially at the end when all the wind starts in the studio and things are blowing around and cameras are flying around. You're thinking, oh my god, what am I watching here? But it's back then you're like, wow, you know, and it's I remember going to school and everyone was talking about it. Everyone was talking about it. You see, it was real. Yeah, it was real. And you're a little kid and you're so conflicted. Was it real? Was it make believe? And of course, as the time goes on, you read things and you see things and you think, okay, it was all just made up. It was all pretend. But then you get that urban kind of, well, it's like that urban legend sort of thing. Well, maybe it wasn't. Maybe it, you know. But, I don't know. That was a classic. That was a classic. I don't know. It was classic. It was just, I mean, we don't really get that on. I mean, England and the UK, we've kind of got this Halloween thing. We haven't, like, fully embraced it. In America, it's a thing. You know, everyone does it. Well, not everyone, but it's like, it's like a thing over there. Over here, it's like, you know, it's for little kids. It's not all little kids. I mean, how many, put it this way, at Halloween, how many kids knock on your door and ask for, like, a Kit Kat or whatever?
God, well, I've just moved house.
So you don't know.
So I don't know about my current. I've got a feeling we're going to get more trick-or-treaters around here, but I used to get, like, sometimes you'd get, like, one or two, if that. One Halloween, I remember we had about 10, and that seemed quite busy. But it's not really a massive thing.
Well, I don't really get any around here. Maybe because I live on a massive hill. It's like the side of Mount Everest, this hill. So people don't want to walk up here. It's they'd rather stick down to the flat bits. But I don't really And my other place, I used to get like the odd, what I used to do actually, I know it's really lazy. What I used to do was I'd buy like a load of like the like penny sweets and put them in like a little bucket and leave them by the door. Like a dog bomb.
Yeah.
I go, no, just take some. I don't want anything to do with you. I don't want to be your mate. Just have a you know, have a chew it or whatever and then go away. You know?
Well, do you put things outside the house to sort of let them know that? Because there's some houses that don't put any decorations up, and I assume they're the ones that don't get trick or treaters knocking on the door. I always put a pumpkin out or something.
I've only got one sign. It's like, beware of the dog, it bites.
Is that a permanent sign, or is it just a Halloween one?
I usually answer the door wearing like an apron covered in blood, holding a carving knife, going, come on in. Come on in.
Yeah, but what about Halloween?
I don't do it for Halloween, only in normal. No, I am.
Yeah, but
go on.
If you don't have anything outside your house, then, you know, you won't get many.
No, I don't have anything, because you'll just get
nicked. I mean, I was going to Halloween hopeful. Like, I buy a big bucket of sweets, and I carve a pumpkin, I put it out, I put some decorations up. Because I just really like Halloween. It's probably like my favourite holiday. But
have you decorated?
Anyway, I was hoping.
As a decorator?
No, not yet. No, I usually just do it on Halloween. I don't like having a lot of things outside the house before that, but yeah, I think I'll.
Well, I have noticed. Might do something. I mean, I have noticed more people buying pumpkins and stuff, but I think that's making kids to sort of chop up. Halloween to make, you know, put candles in and stuff like that, and put them, but like you say, put them outside the front door or whatever. I think that
I've noticed more.
Yeah, I think I noticed that a lot of like supermarkets are selling more sort of what I call Halloween tat, where it was like red dress up stuff and that. I mean, gone are the days where mum would give you rags and say, look, there's a pile of rags there, make something from that, use your brain. Yeah. Now you just go into a supermarket and buy something that was made in, I don't know, China for like 2 pence, and you wear it.
Yeah, and they have the pumpkin farms now. That seems to be quite a new phenomenon. Do you know about
that? No, what's that?
Basically, a farmer will get a bit of empty field.
Okay.
He'll go down to Tesco and he'll buy a ton of pumpkins. He'll rub a bit of dirt on them and he'll just put them into a field. And then parents will pay like 10 quid or whatever to go down there with their kids. Oh, let's go down to the pumpkin patch. We can pick out our own pumpkin. They're just supermarket pumpkins just lying there in a field. It's not like they go in there to pick a pumpkin. And this is a thing.
That's amazing. That's amazing.
There's quite a few. I've seen a few around here. It's just a dirty field with a load of pumpkins just lying like, there in the mud.
Just get some cow poo, spread them over the pumpkin, and let people in and say, for a pumpkin you could buy in the local supermarket for like £1.50, you go to a farm and buy it for like £4.
Yeah, that's exactly. I think it must be like some American thing that's come over here, but
that's amazing.
It's a thing.
That's like, that's just amazing. But then again, I think if you think about it, you got to be a little kid. Put yourself into like a little kid perspective. Mm. If you're going somewhere into a field, maybe a dark wooded area with maybe some, you know, very vicious vampire dogs or something, allegedly, as a kid, that might be a bit of an experience that you had to go and, you know, you went on a quest, a pumpkin quest, to get your pumpkin.
Yeah, yeah, I'm sure it's a lot of fun.
For a little kid, it's like, you know, I mean, you could actually hire some, like, I don't know, there's, I mean, I don't want to sound controversial, but I'm just saying what there is. There are, like agencies out there that are, like specialised in, like, dwarf agencies, and you could dress them up like goblins. Have them in the field or in the woods, little kid. I mean, it just adds.
Yeah, well, you could do. I don't think they do, though. I think it's just a field. I don't think they like go all out and make it all spooky.
I would.
I could be wrong. I've never been
to one. Let's do it, mate. Next year, we're gonna put some money in a pot and we're gonna do it. Go to the agency, hire some high quality, you know, theatrical actors who can act.
of restricted growth.
Go down the supermarket, buy all of the pumpkins, put them in a field, and there you go. Rub some dirt on them, and there you go. We're gonna be sitting pretty.
Yeah, you could do something like like a corn maze or something scary, and then you have to try and get your pumpkin out of the maze.
That's the way.
Make it into a bit more of a experience.
There you go. You've just come up with the idea. You have the pumpkin. You can have the pumpkin for free. You pay an entrance fee, which really covers the cost of the pumpkin as well. So you don't. It's not free really. Then you get the pumpkin. The little kid goes, "Mummy, I want that one." So he gets that pumpkin, and then the mum's got to carry it because the kid can't handle the pumpkin size. But you have to go through the maze to get out. And in the maze,
like scarecrows,
exactly. There are things in there,
around.
Exactly. There you go, and that is the horror aspect of it. So that way, the little kid will always remember that time that he went and picked his first pumpkin. It would be literally,
that'd be a bit
embedded, burnt into his brain. There you go. We've solved the problem, and we've made a way to make some easy coin. There you go. Brilliant.
Yeah, sounds good.
I mean, it's nearly as good as that. The Charlie and the Chocolate Factory experience?
The Wonka experience in Glasgow. Yeah.
Oh, awful! Absolutely awful.
I recently went to a horror maze thing.
Yeah,
and I was expecting it to be a bit like something, like a bit cheap and stuff, but it was actually amazing. It was like properly set up. It's called the Psychopath. It's one of the country's best horror maze. They got all these different things in, and there was
Did anyone jump out at you?
It was just constantly people jumping out. Even when you weren't in one of the mazes, there were just people walking around, like dressed up as different, like a nun, a creepy nun. But then there was you go into one, it's like a fun house, and it's like you're going around, and there's all these clowns jumping out, and then you're in you're in a room that's just so full of, dry ice?
Dry ice,
It's just so full of that you can't see from stuff. Your face, and you're just trying to get through it, and it's like, there's all these clowns in there. It was really good. My mate got dragged into a room on his own, and they just covered him with some stinking, I don't know what it was, just covered his coat and everything in this stinking slime, put a bucket over his head and started hitting it.
I think that's called assault, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what you pay to. You sign a disclaimer when you pay for your ticket.
Really?
They can do anything. Yeah. Good. It was good. Good experience.
That dry ice. I remember one of our. We did a gig years ago, long time ago. We played a played a venue where the guy just had a smoke machine fitted, right? And I think one of the Trotter brothers or whatever must have feared it. Well, Del Boy must have feared it or whatever, because the smoke machine was fitted, but the controls were all ran the wrong way. So it was basically to turn it off, but turn it on, and it was just all messed up. And it was you could remote control it, but because it was all messed up, it was on full blast, and we were playing. And this guy, he was really into his smoke machine. He had a lighting rig and everything. It was really good. Nice stage. But the smoke machine, he literally switched it on because he wanted the atmosphere. And it just went full bore onto the stage. It was just the instant, it was like the fog rolling in from the film, the mist.
Yeah.
And it was like that. And it just completely engulfed the stage. And I couldn't even see what I was doing. And that stuff gets right into your throat, man. It gets right down the back of your throat. And we all started coughing because it was it's just a full-blown waft of this stuff, this dry ice. And he was trying to switch it off, and he couldn't switch it off, and he was panicking. And he ended up ripping the socket out the back to stop it from working. He was panicking because it was filling the venue was massive. And all the people were coughing and complaining because it was just filling the whole place up with this mist. But no, that was I don't like. I'm not really fond of those things because it just makes you cough. But
It might not have been dry ice, and it might have been something else, but it was like, because it was a room full. It was so thick you couldn't see like an inch in front of you. It was really claustrophobic, actually. But
anyway, Tom, I think we've come to the end of this episode because we could be talking for, ages. I want to thank everybody for sticking with us. If you haven't got, it's like, oh, God, shut up and turned off. And we also, both of us, hope you have a nice Halloween and go and do your trick-or-treating or whatever you're going to do, but do it safely and be respectful and, only take your equal share of the sweeties. From me and from Tom, thanks for listening. And until next time, talk to you soon. Bye.
Got questions? O'Reilly Auto Parts has answers. Need a pro you can trust? We've got that too. No matter what you need, our professional parts people have the training and expertise to help you do things right. Deep automotive knowledge. Just one part that makes O'Reilly stand apart. The professional parts people.
Oh, oh.